Hello, friend Carm Capriotto, episode 501 of Remarkable Results Radio. Boy, that's got a cool ring to it. 501, huh? I had the pleasure to interview John Burghauser and Barry Hoyland to discuss an important survey these two companies commissioned. It was Bolt-On Technologies and the Professional Tool and Equipment News. You know them as P10. We share some very important information, results from the survey that you need to know.
Right now, most of the people that responded to this are the ones that have gone through all the changes.
Yeah.
Because most of the changes have occurred in the last 30 years and plus. You know, going from carbs to fuel injection, the electronics that are all coming, going to cars with no computers to cars with more computers than you can shake a stick at.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, great to have you accessing the aftermarket's strongest audio library of information that helps you grow and stay in the know. Remarkable Results Radio is so proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. Now, final plans are coming together, and it's still not too late to join Napa in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020. Did you write that down? April 6th through 9th, 2020? Still not too late to discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry along with your peers. Enroll now for Expo 2020. The best classes are getting full, and it's still not too late to contact your Napa store or commercial salesperson for all the details. Hello, friend. Carm Capriotto here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast guy. Wow, episode 501, and we're always, always looking for the best topics and interviews so you keep on the cutting edge of the automotive aftermarket. You know, hey, a big change in how you listen to the podcasts. You need to know that all three of the shows we produce now have their own feed. Now, what does that mean? Well, you already have your subscription to Remarkable Results Radio. You're listening to that now. And you need to subscribe to the Town Hall Academy and the For the Record shows. Subscribe right here on your listening app. Mark as favorites so you don't miss an episode. Get more details on the app's page at remarkableresults.biz. Hey, we're at it again from Apex 2019. With me in the studio is John Burghauser, the Director of Education at Bolt-On Technology, and Barry Hoyland, technical editor for Professional Tool and Equipment. You know them as P10. Now, together, Bolt-On and P10 commissioned a survey, and I was granted access to the data and had John and Barry join me to share some of the results. Find this episode's talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E501. E means episode. And you're going to hear about some very key findings, and you'll be able to see where you fit according to the survey, where 70% of the respondents were shop owners. Now, that makes for a great survey. We discussed a few of the key findings, like what percent of respondents do over $1 million, how many shops have 2 to 3 techs, and how many are planning to hire. That's just a short list of this excellent audio workshop. Hey, be a fly on the wall. Enjoy. Here in the Apex 2019 studio, I'm with John Burghauser from Bolt-On. How you doing? The Director of Education. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Carm.
Glad to have you back. You've always been a terrific contributor to the show. I just love how you look at things. Thanks for being here. And with you is the technical editor at P10 Magazine. It's Barry Hoyland. Nice to have
you. Thank you for having me.
Well, here's something very interesting. And this man, Barry, is a very humble guy. How many years were you a shop owner?
28.
28, only 28.
Only 28.
And you were a technician for how many?
Ongoing, but 45.
Okay.
Still a technician.
Still, always a
Correct.
Technician. Very good. And, of course, you were a contract trainer for Delphi.
Right.
The resume is impeccable, unbelievable.
Right.
How'd you get a job in the media?
Well, they put out an open call for a technical editor. I submitted an article, and here we are.
And the rest is history.
Correct.
No agent, no nothing?
No, it's been about 5 years now that I've been doing the tool briefing articles and tool reviews, looking at new products on the market and evaluating the tool and writing about those.
Wow, cool. Very good. All right, look it. There's a reason we're here. You know, Karma always has some kind of angle somewhere. And, John, you were kind enough to send me a survey. And Bolt-On and P10 got together and put out this survey, and I think you've basically nailed everything that's going on in the industry, what we needed to know, why we needed to know it, you know, everything you wanted to know about the industry, but we're afraid to ask stuff.
It was really surprising because one of the things about the survey and the questions we're about to talk about is the fact that we were just trying to see who the crowd was that was responding to the survey. So a lot of the questions we're about to talk about and a lot of these charts we're about to talk about is just seeing who these people are. And when I took a few moments to sit back and look them over, it dawned on me that, holy cow, this just really opened a whole lot of, what do I want to say, vision. Because it's right in front of us, but here it is, survey-wise, proven.
Yeah, you got it. And we're going to be quoting an awful lot from this P10 bolt-on survey, and I want you all to understand that if you want a copy of it, maybe John can help you get it or whatever it is. But it's a coveted survey in the industry because it really helps us set up, if you will, the profile, a cross-section, for example. 70% of the people that responded were owners. You nailed that. You nailed the audience.
That is exactly true, and that's why this has got so much to say to us.
Yeah, I know. And then the next was general manager, technician, service writer, and other. The experience in the industry, wow, 75% of the people that responded were 30 years of experience in the industry. Now, you may think that's long in the tooth, and it does go to say later in the survey about who is wanting to do some succession planning and get out or sell. I mean, it's some really great, interesting statistics on that, but we're a mature industry at this current moment.
Well, here's the flip side of that whole discussion that you just had. Right now, most of the people that responded to this are the ones that have gone through all the changes.
Yeah.
Because most of the changes have occurred in the last 30 years and plus. You know, going from carbs to fuel injection, the electronics that are all coming, going to cars with no computers to cars with more computers than you could shake a stick at.
Barry, you've seen it all.
I've seen
and
a lot.
So every time this new tech came out, you weren't one of the guys that said, "Oh my God, I quit, I'm out." You just said, "Bring it on," didn't you?
Yeah, it's a challenge, and I like challenges. But something to keep technology in perspective: 2020 will mark the 40th year of doing diagnostic strategy on computer cars. 40 years. 40 years ago, we used a paperclip to short out the connector on the OBD connector and look at light flashes, check engine light flashing. Today, we've got multitude of scan tools and multiple scan tool we will use on the same vehicle.
Wait a minute. There's some techs out there saying, paperclip what?
Mm-hmm.
Counting lights?
Yes. Yep.
I remember that. I remember, you know, going into shops and looking, says, "What are you doing? Hang on, don't bother me. I'm counting lights."
Mm-hmm. 40 years ago.
Yep. And if you blinked at the wrong time, you got the wrong code. You had to sit there until it went back through its cycle.
You were chasing a rabbit hole.
Yes.
By the way, you guys asked perfect questions. Perfect questions. That's why I fell in love with your survey. And I would, you know, I'm honored that you guys have allowed me to, you know, speak some stats from this occasionally while I do interviews, because I think it helps me learn my audience. I think it helps me solve issues in the industry and to talk about trends, and the trends in the industry is really being bubbled up inside this survey. I mean, I think you can see trends by what's come out of here. And, you know, the business type is perfect. General service repair, 72%. So again, the audience, you nailed it.
Well, I mean, that's why this is so important to all of us to talk about, because your audience is these people that are responding to this, and they may not know that they all are grouped together. So we want to be sure that we share that with them and let them know that, hey, you're not the only one.
Historically, a lot of surveys have been, you know, the top tier shops. So you don't really get a good perspective of the entire industry. And this survey that John did here was encompassing all aspects of the market rather than the top tier that are doing things right.
So top tier, profit, sales, interesting, right? Because we all like to say, you know, I'm a mover and a shaker, and how many people have said, you know, Carm, I know you know that guy down the road who does $1 million, but he's in debt.
Yeah.
And so sales doesn't make top tier, but sales does help you differentiate, you know, the size of the business.
Yes, but the size of the business, even if it's a large business, what they're doing in their shop may not translate well to a smaller shop.
That's right.
So you've really got to have a good perspective, and I think you did very well with that, John.
Yeah, so
the questions you asked.
Thank you, Barry. 21% of the respondents did $1 million or more. Wow. 21%. And then you had another average group in the middle that went from $200,000 to $999,999. Mm-hmm. And that was, what is it, about 35%? Is mm-hmm. kind of, if you will, in the middle. And the small groups came up to about 40%, and that would be $200,000 and lower. Are they going to make it, Barry?
Sure, they're probably on a smaller scale. It's a one- or two-person shop, or maybe a husband, wife, something like that. But they're in their growth stages, so they've really got to understand what to do in order to grow organically so that they can keep up. To go from a $200,000 shop to a $500,000 shop, there's a lot of growth pains with that.
Is the smaller shop going to adapt to the technology that your company sells?
Well, that's the question, because a lot of smaller shops think that they're too small to adopt. They don't think they need this, but you know, when you think about going digital, you can have one person running the whole shop because everything's taken care of automatically in the background. There's a lot less copying and things that have to be done. So that's kind of like a misnomer. These folks have to understand that the technology can help them even if they're a very small shop.
I agree, and everybody has to keep in mind a shop sells time. So whatever they can do to save time, they are more profitable. So if it's less people and they're selling more hours, then they are a lot more profitable, and they're going to get to that higher level very quickly. Even if they don't grow the sales, they're going to be more become more profitable.
39% of the shops have 2 to 3 technicians. I mean, this is small mom and pop. This is great. I mean, this is the fabric of our industry. Mm-hmm. And 4 to 6 shops were 26%, and 7+ were 5%. And so I find that to be interesting, that 22% of the shops in the survey had only one technician.
That's the shop owner. It's not necessarily a hired person, it's the shop owner. And sure. The same thing with the two, that's probably a shop owner and one helper, or one either service advisor or another technician.
So let's talk about that. You said something fabulous, Barry, just a minute ago, and that they're on their way upward. They're on the trek. How many of them are on the downward slide? We don't know that. But I worry that the 1- and 2-person shop are struggling. And I don't mean to be the naysayer, the negative person here, and they don't know how to go out and get specific help to help them become bigger, better. It's not about how many you have. It's about how much money you can make. You know, guys have hobbies versus that they're really running businesses. We hear it all the time on the podcast.
Right. They bought themselves a job.
They bought themselves, absolutely, yeah. Exactly. It's one of the best quotes that we hear from people that come on the podcast. And what can we do to help them, Barry?
We need to remember that a lot of these one-person, two-person shops are in a growth stage, and they probably were a technician. They're not necessarily a business person. So understanding how to grow the business by attending business or management classes, getting products that John has here that will give them more time so they can become a better technician. Training is, I don't know the right word, but you have to be trained. Whether it's a shop management position or as a technician, training is so important anymore, and there's no way you can keep up with it.
Yeah, but if I train my people and they leave.
If you don't train them, they stay.
Thank you. I always lead with that, and right. I hope somebody finishes the rest of the sentence.
Yeah. I've gone both ways. Okay. I paid for the training, and I've had technician leave right away. So I'm not quite sure legality, every state in the country, but I formed a contract with them so that if I paid for training, they were required to either pay me back if they didn't stay within the contract period.
What's the contract period average? 6 months?
It was 6 months,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
But it was basically to get my investment back. Now, I invest in my employees. I always did and always will. But they need to return that. So if I pay for their training program that was $3,000, you know, with the room, the board, the travel, the cost of the training, and they're gone for a week so they're not being productive, there's a cost to me to that. And I don't want them to leave as soon as they get back, give their notice. There was no benefit to me. So I formed a contract with them. If they didn't stay within that period, then they would have to pay that training back. And it held up.
Hi, Carm here, and I want to talk to you about the NAPA Auto Care Center program for health insurance. We've all heard the reports about the rising cost of health insurance, but you'll be happy to know I'm here with really good news. The Napa Insurance Center is now offering the Napa National Health Program, and it's saving Napa Auto Care Centers and their employees money, lots of money. In fact, in the first 90 days following the launch of the program, Napa stores and auto care centers and their employees saved over $2.7 million. That's all thanks to the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with United Healthcare. It gives auto care centers access to the national large group rates on medical insurance with premiums discounted up to 30%. Now, these rates are based on the collective purchasing potential of 22,500 Napa locations, including both Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care Centers. And listen to this. The news just keeps getting better. You can choose from four excellent United Healthcare medical plans with varying levels of coverage and deductibles to meet a range of needs. All plans are PPOs, preferred provider organizations, with comprehensive coverage. Because of the Napa Insurance Center's partnership with Aflac, you can have access to supplemental insurance benefits, including disability, accident, hospital, and more, all at a Napa-only discount, up to 35%. The Napa Benefits Center can help you with other group benefits, too, including group life insurance, retirement, HSAs, and more. Napa's National Health Benefit Program is just one of the many reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Talk to your servicing Napa store. For more detailed information about the Napa National Health Program, visit the Napa Benefits Center at www.napabenefitscenter.com or call the Napa Benefits Center at 844-627-2123.
John, you're out training. What do you see?
Well, if you're not training, you're falling behind. I mean, and the dangers that are being presented to you by today's vehicles and the technology, forget about making the money because you're fixing it. Think about the money you may lose if you make the mistake because you weren't trained.
Well, but wait a minute. Experience is making a mistake once, right?
Right.
Okay. So we've all got to make a mistake or fail forward somehow. We've all broke things in the past, and we have to get over that. But you'll break more and more and more without training.
It's hypercritical that you know what you're doing before you do it.
Yeah.
Because if you go and experiment with today's car, just one wrong crossed wire, and you can fry everything. And think about the airbag system. Think about these driving-by-wire cars. If you make one mistake in there and you don't set it correctly, a customer may go and drive to their own death.
Well, I see the next challenge as being ADAS, is they need to be on top of that technology, and there's so many potential pitfalls and liabilities that come into play if they're not trained on it. I'm quote-unquote retired, not as a working technician all the time anymore. I still spend 80 hours a year in training, and that's not enough.
You basically nailed it a minute ago. Based on the next point of the survey I'd like to talk about. And you talked about owner accomplishments. This was a fabulous slide that I loved. And let me just cover it. I opened an auto repair shop that does good work and provides for my family. 62% of the respondents said that. 38% of the respondents said, built a sustainable business that will continue when I'm gone. Wow. Big, powerful, succession planning. You could tell, training, get it, leadership. 29% said, I bought a job, keeps me active, and it pays the bills. You hit that. You nailed that. So that's 29% of the respondents.
That's a very high number.
It is. So what do we... So if they're listening, and I know you are, if you're happy, then fine. Stay there. That's exactly what you want. But don't pull the rest of the industry down with a lower labor rate. We'd love you to get the labor rate up. We'd love you to become technically, I mean, you know what? You could be just as good as we preach training, we preach leadership, we preach technology, your product. You can be a small, I got a hobby, and still have DVI. You can have all of that stuff. You can act big, but still be small. But what I see and what I hear about the struggling shops and the shops that I've met who need to cross the line and get help, they have decided to abandon that mode of business operation and kick it up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
And 29% of our industry is almost the numbers that I keep thinking about. I always say we have 20%, we have 60% struggling, 20% on the top line, and 20% way at the bottom.
Yeah, they're very complacent where they are, whether it's in the middle or down low or even high. They're very complacent with where they are. one of the things I teach when I'm doing a management class is, do you have an exit strategy? And most people don't. I know how I got here, but I don't know what's going to happen after this. So are you going to pass it on to a family member? Are you going to sell it to somebody else?
Yeah.
Another pinch point for a lot of shops is their labor rates. I ask them, how do you set your labor rate? And most of the shop owners will say it's what my neighbors are charging.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know their rent. You don't know their employee wages, their other costs of doing business. So without tracking all of that and having a good number of what your costs are, there's no way you can set your labor rate.
Absolutely right.
You know, another piece to the puzzle, too, to think about this, and I think you hit it, Barry, is the fact that when you get involved with training, you're getting among your peers. And when you're among your peers, not only are you learning what the coursework is that you're there, but interacting with your peers is another way of learning. And that's another key piece that they're missing, is that I used to learn as much from the people I was taking the course with as what I was learning at the course. And that could solve that problem.
Yes. It's almost all courses that I like are interactive, where the students are interacting with the instructor and everybody's learning something. I still learn things when I teach a class.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like.
You had a slide in here about hiring plans. 49% of the respondents said, I have no plans to hire.
That's a high number.
It is.
I don't know how they expect to grow.
49% said, I plan to hire 1 to 3 people in the next 12 months. And 29% say, I want to hire 4 or more. So there is brightness, but 49% none, 49% 1 to 3. Still tells us that there's an awful lot of lower-end struggling shops that have no plans, no strategic, no nothing. It's like you said, it's the hobby.
Mm-hmm. It may be a combination of that, but I think there's some other aspect of that that's really not maybe reported in the survey, is that there are some specialty shops that only work on, let's say, a Toyota or a Honda or something like that.
But Barry, it doesn't matter that if they're not going to grow.
That's true.
If they don't have any plans, here it is. You get stonewalled at a certain level. I'm happy. I'm doing $500,000. I'll take the 800 customers that I earn my living on, and nothing more, nothing less. No social media, no promotion, no new technology, no new computer system. The everything's old. And so my great question, I'd love to go into a crystal ball and figure out when does that atrophy and die.
Well, I think,
you need a crystal ball.
Thank you.
There you go. But here's the other point to think about, and I think you actually already said something along these lines. Many of these people got into business because they wanted to do it. They didn't get into business because they were business people. They were people that fixed cars.
Yeah.
And when I was teaching post-secondary automotive, all the students were like, yeah, I'm just going to open up my own shop and do all this stuff. And then I started teaching them about business planning and business plan, like Wharton, University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go and build your own business plan. And if you don't succeed in building a plan that works, a lot of people quit right up front, because as soon as they realize that they have to forecast their future and make every step along the way, they know that they can't do it. And there's people in business that have done it without ever completing a business plan. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have these people stuck in the mud.
Yeah. We don't have enough time on the podcast to go through the entire survey, but I'll tell you, it's fascinating to look at this. And even if you're a service professional and you looked at this, you could kind of put where your strategic plan is, where the position that you are in your life and in your business, and look at this stuff and say, I'm in or I'm out, I'm behind the eight ball, I'm ahead of it. One of the interesting slides pointers was training interest. And they talked about customer service communication. 53% had a huge interest in customer service communication. I mean, isn't that what it's all about? I'm glad to see that, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as much as we need technical training, if you don't have the sale, you can't afford the tech.
Well, a lot of the technicians that are in the shop, maybe they're physically unable to go, or they're just tired of working on cars or whatever. They're moving or transitioning into the service advisor aspect. And they just don't know how to talk to a customer.
That's right. They speak car.
Yeah. It's, you've got to turn a customer into a client, and then you've got to react to the client and communicate with them all the time so they know what's going on. Then you've got different aspects of the client, of who they are. Is it somebody that's in their 60s, 70s, that has been a shop or been your client for many, many years? or is it a millennial that you're trying to reach with social media? And to be quite honest, very, very few shops do that well.
I have to agree with Barry on that because, you know, for example, I taught post-secondary for a number of years, and when we used to bring in new instructors, one of the things that we tried to get these guys to do that, when fixing cars and very successfully doing that all their life, they didn't know how to translate what they did to teach a student. And that is key right there. I mean, if they can't teach something that they did every day in and out, and they fixed it and they never thought about it, how can you communicate to a customer why they need to replace something?
Right. And it even goes a little bit beyond that with how do you communicate what you're doing and the value of what you're doing? Like I use in my training classes, I do, how often do you use the four-letter F word in your shop? And some places, like I was in Utah, and every shop owner there was, oh, we never use that. I said, you never use the word free? That's a four-letter F word. You need to explain the value of what that is. If your client doesn't understand what you're giving them for free, then there's no value to it. So you have to explain that and be able to communicate to the customer the value of you. So you've got a labor rate that you're doing the same as your neighbor, and you're giving things away free.
By the way, great story. The connection to Utah, I love that. The four-letter F word, boy, can I use that?
Sure.
That is really, really good. Let's just dive into the top five training interests. Besides the customer service communication, which is very profound, it's at 53%, and then 53% said establishing effective labor rates. That's like, whoa. And then next was generating repeat business. That's a whoa. Mm-hmm. And then shop time management, and then team building. I love to see that team building in the top five.
Well, that's extremely interesting to me because I was just contacted to provide some management training, and every one of those subjects is on the wish list.
Wow.
No technical. They wanted all management classes.
Wow, see. And that is the next frontier. And that is what the CEOs of our service professionals out there, I don't care if you call yourself president, CEO, or the chief cook and bottle washer, that's what's necessary.
And then on top of that, we've got to integrate new technology, whether it's a telematics device or an onboard or a digital inspection or social media. We've got to be able to integrate those components into the
shop,
into an overall format too.
Absolutely. Okay. Hey, guys, it was great having you here. I know we didn't do justice to the value of this survey. It is comprehensive. It is huge. So much good stuff to read in there, but I appreciate you coming in and letting us highlight this. I know it's at the end of the day. It's at long end of the day. I mean, you guys are probably exhausted here. We're, you know, the show's about ready to close up in 15 minutes. But, you know, you're in the T&E, the tool and equipment business. Talk to me about the value of that in our world today.
Well, you cannot keep up with the technology as quick as you need to if you don't have the right tools and equipment. So part of that decision-making process is understanding what the tools and equipment can do for you, what the ROI is on those, how quickly you can get the return on your investment, and how to integrate those tools. So you've really got to do a lot of research, whether it's an end wrench or whether it's a digital scanner or a system for performing ADAS calibration. You need to understand what the impact is on your business, the cost of it, and how soon you'll get an ROI. So staying up to date and current with that information and getting information through sources like P10 and getting that info up front and current and all the time is very, very critical to make those decisions.
T&E used to mean travel and entertainment to me.
Yes.
But now it means tool and equipment.
Yes.
And you know, I have to tell you something. You pick up your magazine. It's so well done. There's so many great things in it. And, you know, we love our baubles and we love our new tools and ideas, right? You guys remember years ago, Lyle used to, you know, have a contest to see who come up with a new tool for them.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
still a couple companies I've seen doing that.
Yeah, cool. Very good. John, you've been on before. I've always loved your contributions. You've got one of the best sayings about training in the industry. Could you repeat it for us?
Well, you know, training is the oxygen of the industry. And then Barry just shared with us that you got to keep up with the equipment. Well, the equipment's not usable if you don't know how to use it. And that's the basic thing. You know, how many people still plug in and pull a code and go, okay, I'm going to throw that oxygen sensor in? But it's not the way it is. The training tells you the oxygen sensor is reading something negative because it could be an air leak or many other thing. That training is what is needed, because no matter what equipment you have, if you don't know how to use it and you don't know how to use the one piece of equipment that you have between your ears, how are you going to succeed?
Great point. Thanks for being here. Barry Hoyland from P10, technical editor, and we also found out that you're a former shop owner, technician, contract trainer for Delphi. All world, man. All world. And John Burkhauser from Bolton, director of education. Thank you both for bringing me this survey and for bringing a little bit of it to life here on the podcast.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.